Christmas. Christmas, the most magical time of year. But in Bailey Downs this Christmas, it's different.
Ho, ho, ho.
Merry Christmas, you miserable old building and loan.
Merry Christmas, you scurvy spider.
You once called me a miserable old man. Man, you're nothing but a miserable young man.
Well, you want a new episode? I'll throw a lasso around it for you and give it to you. Hello, everybody. Merry Christmas. This is our Christmas special. Tonight, we will be focusing on a Christmas-themed, paranormal-themed film. We will be not having a top three tonight, and instead replacing that top three list with the annual Tony and Maddie Awards.
It's the second annual Tony and Maddie Awards.
Yes, get your tuxedos ready. We're going to do a year-end review, and we're going to tell you why we're doing that before New Year's in a couple seconds as we recap. But first of all, I'm Maddie Blake, and that is Tony Arkin. Welcome, buddy.
Hello. What's happening?
You are a sight for sore eyes.
It's good to see you too, man. We're still rolling these out, but it never feels like it's enough or we have enough time. I'm just like, I always want to devote more time to it.
Same. We're both super busy. And I don't know. Can I say what you're doing? Are you?
Yeah, we can tease it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, Tony, you are working on your second feature film. And that is why we're doing this year in review.
It's the second annual Tony and Maddie Awards.
Because this is going to be our Christmas episode and kind of our end of the year wrapped up into one. We're also celebrating our second year anniversary, thanks to producer Kerry, who pointed that out to me. Totally missed that.
Boy, would we be lost without Kerry's guidance.
Seriously.
We wouldn't know what's going on.
You know what? And on the list of year-end things I'm thankful for, he is like right up on top of the list. He's been fantastic. As I said, beyond fan and now producer. We are kind of wrapping this all up into one because, Tony, you're going to be traveling very shortly for that film project, and you'll be a little out of pocket through early January. So we're going to kind of get two birds with one stone here in this episode. We're going to take a little holiday hiatus for just a couple weeks, few weeks at most.
Yeah.
So don't worry.
And it's possible. Maybe I can negotiate like a on the road special. I'd love to try to do that. I'd love to try to do one while I'm away. That would be actually pretty cool. Be really hard, but
yeah,
let's keep it as a possibility.
Great. Just like we did when I was on the road. Like,
yeah.
If it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't.
See how you like it.
Because, well, I just know. Well, see how you like it. Now you're going to know how exhausted I was at 8, 9 at night trying to do an episode. But I wanted to because it was like, it gets your mind off, as tired as you may be. It gets your mind off the drudgery of what you're going through. Not that all of it's drudgery, but it's intense. And it's fun to just talk about a movie when you're in a state like that.
You just need a timeout once in a while.
Absolutely. It's funny. We're talking about this movie of yours, and it came up today. A friend of mine watched Sender, and they're like, boy, man, Tony really made a great movie. I'm like, I know. And they never said anything about my performance. But he started talking about working with different actors and what's that like. And then I saw on my scroll that it was Steve Buscemi's birthday today, the day before my birthday, actually. And I got to meet him, and he was one of the nicest people I've ever met. So happy birthday to Steve Buscemi.
Happy birthday to Steve Buscemi.
Mm-hmm.
And happy birthday to you then, too, I guess.
Well, that was my indirect way of letting you know that it's my birthday.
Yeah. So it's a birthday show, in fact. Really is what it is.
I'm not a negative person, as you know. I try not to be. I'm very earnest. I try to suck the joy out of life because it's a trail of tears. I focus on the positive when I can. But I'm adult birthdays. I'm like, what are we doing? What you know what I mean? Like, I think after like 21, and then I think it's a Louis C.K. bit. He's like 21 and then 80 should be the next birthday you celebrate. You know what I mean? Because like, what have you done?
I kind of agree. The only thing I don't agree is that I like, there's certain people I like having a birthday party for. Not me necessarily.
Copy that.
But yes. I'd like to celebrate Amelia's birthday. If I had advance notice, I would have liked to celebrate your birthday. It's been busy, Maddie. My computer's broken. Doesn't
well,
tell me right.
You've hit the nail on the head, and that's where the non-cynical part for me would come in, because I, if it makes you happy, I would be glad to celebrate your birthday. Mm. But for me, I'm like, what am I going to get, a paper hat and a little
I think really how I feel is similar to this, but that it's really more just about having enormous amounts of money. If I had the money, I think I'd be celebrating birthdays. But at my budget right now, there's not really a birthday party that's... I've had a pizza. I've eaten pizza before. You know, I'm going to save it until I make the ducats.
Apparently, no one in the Arkin household there has found the dollar store yet. Because you can put a huge bash together for very short money at the dollar store.
Really? Okay, great.
Oh, my God. Max just had Friendsgiving. And I kind of demanded it because it was like falling apart. He's like, well, this person can't have it. I'm like, we're hosting it. You're having Friendsgiving with your friends. It's his senior year in high school. Like, you're doing this. You missed almost 2 years because of that stupid COVID thing. And I was like, you're doing it. And so I went to the dollar store and I put together, it looked like we had spent hundreds and hundreds of dollars. The whole thing cost me like $23. I got tablecloths, napkins, cups, drinks. Everything's $1. It's the dollar store. That said, everything disintegrated halfway through the party.
Get it.
But that's not the point.
What is Friendsgiving? Is this a new thing?
It is kind of a new term, I think. I've heard it a bunch.
Wake me up. Tell me what's going on.
Yeah, it's just non-family members getting together for Thanksgiving. What it sounds like. So it's like...
Well, shouldn't you have your friends over for Thanksgiving anyway? I thought the whole thing was to have your friends over.
No. I think it's traditionally been a family thing.
No, traditionally... It's family, of course, but also the whole idea is to have anybody that's not got a dinner to invite them over to celebrate with you, I thought was the correct way to do Thanksgiving.
Maybe in spirit, but in practice, I know growing up, we didn't have like friends over. My friends were at their people's house. You know what I mean? Like there was never a friend. Maybe there's like a...
No, I do know what you mean. Nobody in your family bothered to ask around and see if there's anybody that was alone for Thanksgiving or needed a dinner.
Oh, no, we actively banned outsiders.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, I can see why you'd make a big deal out of this Friendsgiving thing, seeing as you've treated your friends so miserably up until now.
My grandmother, in fact, think of her more like a bouncer. She would sit in front of the door.
She was tough.
She would check your ID as you walked in. We got a hand stamp.
Yeah. No drinks outside.
Yeah, back then, everyone was at their families. I don't remember ever having... Oh, someone did have an exchange student 1 year, and they came. I remember that was big to do. We took a picture with the exchange student. That was very exciting. And then we'd bring girlfriends if it got serious. You didn't bring a girlfriend or a boyfriend to a family Thanksgiving unless it was like the, you know, pretty much the real deal. Like,
okay,
my family's pretty
more often than not, there would be a couple of straggler or two, you know, around the table, I guess,
at your place,
at our place. But oftentimes it was mostly family. But I just think, like, in the spirit of it, Thanksgivings I've actually had, you know, when I'm not with family, this is coming out wrong. We're great. No, this is coming out wrong. When I've had Thanksgivings just with friends, you know.
Yeah.
I miss my family, but there's something about it that feels really great. Like
celebrating
like beyond the bloodlines. It's good.
Yeah, absolutely. We had one year when I was in my 20s. We called it Losers Thanksgiving because we were all broke, and it's a memory. You could make an independent movie of it. We were in this crappy apartment and just had the best time of our life. Yeah, there's no pressure with friends.
Yeah.
In fact, I think the spirit of it is actually, and I could be wrong on this, but from what I've been gathering, it is very much like an anti-family Thanksgiving type of feel. Like, look, this is just Friendsgiving. This is relaxed.
Right.
You know, I think that's the spirit of it. So it's wonderful. But you should do both if you can.
Right.
Right.
Sure.
Ideally, but
do
you know what
you want, do whatever you want, don't do it or don't do it. I, what difference does it make?
That's right. That's exactly right. But what we do want to do is, well, this is a Christmas episode, not a Thanksgiving episode. So we will, although it's the holidays.
It's a birthday episode.
It kind of is.
It's really more than anything else. It's a birthday episode. I mean, we got to face this.
And a New Year's episode. My goodness.
This is your birthday.
Yeah, I'm kind of not focusing on it because I'm getting so old. Hmm. I know how you feel, but it is annoying when, I mean, we all become our parents to some extent. We become like curmudgeon-y, but like when you hear young people saying they're old, people in their 30s, and see them posting like, oh, I'm so old that Friends seems old to me. I'm like, listen to me. You were literally in a pull-up when I was dating my wife. So stop with the old talk. You know what I mean?
I do. I have many more years of experience feeling that way than you, too.
Many, just a few.
A countable number.
I've made enough old jokes at your expense. Congratulations on a second feature. That is unbelievable, Tony.
Well, you know, Mike and I are back at it again for round two.
I love it. It's amazing because you were kind of, when you finished that first one, you're like, I think I'm done making movies.
It's pretty bruising, you know. It really is. It's really a rough few years of your life making any movie. And Zender was particularly crazy, you know. It was particularly long, involved movie to make, and it took me, you know, I needed a pandemic to relax for a couple years. Because you're right, like, for a while I was like, no, never gonna do that again. I don't want to make any movies anymore. That was too hard.
Well, that's why I broke the vial at the airport to give you to. Oh, did I say that out loud? Never mind.
Is that a 12 Monkeys reference?
Don't worry about it.
Sorry.
I had nothing to do with it, okay?
I mean, I'm worried inside. I won't say anything, but I am going to worry.
There was that weird story about the airport, Logan Airport, those. It doesn't matter. It was like a Harvard guy. He was sneaking spies back to, like, right before the pandemic happened. These spies were arrested going out of Logan Airport from Harvard.
I don't remember this.
Oh, you don't remember this? Oh, my God. No. You should Google it after we're done with this. Total, like, scary story, all real. A guy he was calling them lab assistants. Turns out they were spies. They were Chinese spies. They were caught at the airport at Logan leaving with vials, and the FBI came in and got involved and arrested them. Said, what are these vials? They said, well, we're working on infectious diseases. Guess where they were going?
I don't know, man.
Wuhan, China, to the lab where it all started. And so that story resurfaced after the kind of COVID outbreak. People go, well, wait a second. What about this guy who was working with Chinese operatives and had vials at Logan? And as far as I thought I've mentioned this on the show before, as far as I know, he's going on trial for it. I don't know what the latest is. That story kind of disappeared. Surprise, surprise. So that's kind of what I was referencing.
Okay. I thought you were talking about 12 Monkeys, but that's basically the same story. So
that too. Yes. It was an infectious disease reference. Yeah. My comedy. I strictly stick to, you know, horrible pandemics. That
apocalyptic comedy is your forte. Mm-hmm.
I'm going to do a quick 20 on cancer after this. Merry Christmas, everybody.
This is Krampus, right?
What's a Krampus?
He's like an anti-Santa Claus. A demon who punishes the naughty. He whips them, chains them up, stuff like that.
That's fun.
Season 7, Episode 7, A Christmas Horror Story. Just found randomly by both of us. Tony, had you ever heard of this film before? I had not.
As it turns out, it's on Shudder right now, which is how I saw the movie. And perfect. I'd seen the poster, but it wasn't on my list. I didn't intend to see it.
Same. We were just kind of, what Christmas movie could we do? You wouldn't let me do It's a Wonderful Life, even though I lobbied for it. It is supernatural.
It is. I'm not arguing that with you. I just don't. It's no. I couldn't take it. Talking about that with you for an hour would... I don't know.
You admitted something that makes you virtually a Christmas criminal. You've never seen Miracle on 34th Street.
Oh, you know what? That's true. I've never. It's a bit of a guilty spot for me. I have not seen it.
Someone who loves classic cinema like you, a young baby Natalie Wood, I think, right?
Is it?
I think it was. I think it was Natalie Wood at like 8 years old or something.
Okay.
It's a lovely movie.
You know, I'm sure it is.
On 34th Street, 1947. My goodness. Natalie Wood played Susan Walker, Susan Walker. Hmm. And Edmund Gwenn played Santa Claus. Any Edmund Gwenn facts that you can think of, Tony? Was he in any?
Ed Gwenn, I guess, was Fred Gwynn's father.
Was he really? See?
I'm just guessing.
Oh. He might have been. That's awesome.
I think there was an Ed Gwynn and a Fred Gwynn, but I don't. Maybe it's a different one.
I'm taking it as fact. That's a Matty fact that will become fact, even if it's not.
Well, it's true if it's not factual.
So this film is a series of, it's like an anthology movie, different storylines going on at the same time, sometimes out of time. We find out we're looking back on one particular story. They're all connected somehow loosely. It's kind of like, what was that movie, Crash? Different story vignettes, right? But a Christmas version.
That's a great one to pull out. crash.
I mean, well, that's a level we're talking here.
Oh, God.
And a Christmas horror story. Let me just set the table, the Christmas table, set the tree, and then we'll get into it. There's basically five little mini stories going on. There's Santa in the North Pole. There are kids in a high school investigating a double murder the year before, kind of a la a little bit of Blair Witch handheld investigation going on. There's an alcoholic DJ in the town of Bailey Downs, which sounds a little bit like Bedford Falls. There is the most annoying family in film history going on a trip to an aunt's, I think, or a grandmother's. I'm not sure. It doesn't matter.
An aunt's, yeah.
Okay. And there is a young family with a young boy who goes to cut down a Christmas tree and all hell breaks loose for them. Those are kind of the main storylines going on. And you visit one for a few minutes, then visit another one, and you find out some connections that those families have as it goes on, tenuous as they may be. And it's a kind of crazy ride. At times, it reminded me a little bit of a Bubba Hotep type of feel to it, kind of a gonzo wild horror take on Christmas comedy and then not comedy. It was a lot of kind of things wrapped up into one.
It is definitely an anthology movie, but I think where it's already more interesting than a lot of anthology movies, because anthology horror goes back a long way.
Yeah.
And there have been anthology horror movies for a really long time, since the late 40s. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of a classic idea. And usually those stories are very different, like they are here. It's rare in a horror anthology that they'll be really crossed over too much. There'll be some threading between the stories, but it feels like really classic horror anthology in the best sense of the word. I haven't probably liked been surprised by a dark horse for us like this since Vast of Night. This movie gets my love. I love
excellent.
Love this movie. I had a great time.
Okay, great. Because it built for me like a momentum, like a snowball. Like at first I was like, oh boy, this is going to be a long
well it's watch. Smarter than we are at first. It's ahead of us, which is a rare thing. Mm-hmm. I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then it turns out that it's way ahead of us. I think
there's a big twist in this movie, which was awesome.
Really don't want to give away this movie.
No,
so
we
should
will
be
not.
Careful and yes. We'll take out any spoilers if they come out, because it's really worth it to have low expectations, I think, is good.
Yeah,
so in a way,
definitely
like see it first and then listen to this podcast, because I think one of the reasons it worked was because I was so just sideswiped by it. I'd never heard
Same.
Of it. Thought it was going to be terrible.
Yeah, it's filmed. Let me say this. I thought it was gonna be terrible too, because it's Canadian produced, and it really does look like a Hallmark movie. I'm talking the film quality or the video quality. And, the kind of unknown actors and actresses, and it subverts all those false expectations I had in a lot of ways. The performances in this film across the board are awesome.
That's where I really hooked in. I at first thought we were in trouble. Like the first
Same.
3-5 minutes, I was like, oh God, what have we yeah. done to ourselves? What?
Exactly.
Not that it was like too much. It was just, I just thought it was going to be a slog, like a
yes.
really bad time.
Yes.
And there's a moment that happens in the second story we slip over to, because it starts with the Santa Claus
yeah.
story,
yeah.
like full on Santa in yeah. the North Pole with his elves and everything.
Yep.
And they also do a great thing with the elves in this, though they are, I believe, played by little people. They're offered more, I think, of a meal with these roles than maybe ordinarily if maybe little people were playing elves in a movie. Because
right.
I've heard they're a little tired of that.
I don't blame them.
They're a little
yeah.
sick of it.
Sure.
But I don't know. I mean, I'm not one to say, but I thought there was enough of a spin on it to
oh.
make this really kind of clever and fun in that regard. So it starts off with Santa, and then we go to this family that's having this
yeah.
really horrible time
yes.
in the car going to visit their aunt.
Yes.
Really nasty people, and people you don't really like. But the dad says, this is one of my favorite moments in the movie, and it happens pretty early. The dad says, I just wanted to get us all together for some bonding time. And they cut to the back seat, and his little son rolls his eyes in the funniest way. It's like a take to him, and he just goes, oh, God. And it's so real. It was so funny and well edited just as a joke. I was like, they're ahead of me here. They're actually making a good movie. And I had to go back in my head after a half an hour went by and I was like, oh no, this is on point. I had to go back and look at the first 5 minutes again. And I realized the first 5 minutes are hysterical, but you just don't realize that yet because you think it's bad, not on purpose.
Exactly. Even the couple themselves, I saw and I went, oh, this guy and that actress, what are we doing? This is so unbelievable. And then that is addressed later very directly. So yeah, it's just surprising in so many ways. And back to the opening scene, we see Santa's North Pole, basically. It's in the trailer. I'm not giving anything away. And, you know, I thought to myself, it looks very, very CGI. It is CGI. It's like a computer-made North Pole. And yet the imagination to make it is really good. I'm like, if there was a North Pole Santa workshop, it would look more like this than anything we've ever seen in any other special, right?
It's got a little Viking quality to it, you know, like, Norse quality.
Yes. And he's a badass. Like, if there was a Santa Claus, he would have to be like this guy. He's like a martyred Germanic Christian monk warrior guy. He's been delivering presents for thousands of years. Of course, he'd be tough, you know?
Okay. Oh, look, you're the expert.
Well, you know what I mean? Like,
I wouldn't traditionally thought of a more jolly, you know, friendly, roly-poly gentleman.
Think about a guy who has to once a year deliver presents.
That's your job. I don't have to do that.
To children all around the world. I mean, he would have to be a little gritty, right?
I just like the fact that he has to be a badass. I think that's funny.
Yes, it's hilarious.
But it works in the context of this movie. And yeah, I agree that there's a great sense of humor in the design of the workshop, and he has an office building like Santa. It's not just like you see his place in the North Pole. It's like a modern office building with elevators and
stuff. And
processing
and
center.
Yes. The type of minutia you would need in a modern facility to do business. When I saw the CGI, I went, uh-oh. But then it immediately goes to a kind of a tracking shot of the back of Santa, and everything is the exact opposite. It's rough hewn doors, like a barn farm, very tactile, very realistic. You could smell the reindeer, you know, and I'm going, oh, wow. Okay. All right. You know, it stopped being that very quickly. And that made me think of you, because here's what I thought. This obviously was on a budget. I don't think they had $100 million to make this. So they used what they had, which is, okay, we've got to show the aerial shot of the North Pole. We can't afford to build something in the North Pole. We'll computerize that. But when it gets to the important stuff, when we get to the character development, we get to the scenes, this is going to be well-crafted. And so it made me kind of fall in love with it quick when I saw the juxtaposition between what they had to build and then what they were able to build. And
they
paid attention. You with me?
I am with you. I mean, I think you got to really... you got to trust us and stick past the first minute and a half of this movie. The title sequence is about as bad a title sequence as I've seen all year.
Yeah,
it's horrible. Yeah. I mean, that's one of the reasons I thought we were in for a bad time.
Yeah.
The computer animation is ghastly. It's terrible in the beginning. And I mean, I'm talking about like the flying title cards and the generated, Santa kick-ass battle axe staff that he has is flying around. It's terrible. And then you see a pretty bad snowscape, and the outside of the domain looks like, you know, I don't even know a video game to say.
Right.
And then
video game.
And then you get inside and you're like, oh, the production designer, the actual production designer knew what they were doing. The CGI crew, I think they just, I don't know. It's like they got almost like they got like something that had been pre-made of like North Pole pre-made something, and they just slapped in the beginning.
Yeah, totally.
The rest of the design though is pretty good. And you know, I'm not a fan of that kind of like high def quality. It's clearly shot with, you know, good video, but it's definitely like that streaming Netflix vibe on it.
It's Hallmark. New Hallmark movies look like this.
Not a look that I like at all.
Same. Agreed.
But the design team did a great job within that. So
yes.
I mean, I'm not loving the way that the colors look, but the color choices were great. You know what I mean?
Right. It's like the creative palette they used works and all makes sense and is all thought of. You can tell it's thought of.
against the elves. I fear they may all become infected. How did it all come to this?
Can I mention something really interesting? Because it relates back to this anthology thing. It was something I forgot to say about it. Because usually, you know, the other pleasure of this movie is the fact that it's an anthology movie doesn't even dawn on you until about almost halfway through.
Yeah.
Because the all of these stories are individual stories and the characters don't overlap and they don't really, other than themes, really connect. But or that they kind of happen in one night maybe or something. But
What they're dealing with is similar.
But they're all intercut with each other. So it doesn't, you know, it could have been assembled where each of these were like short half hour films.
Yes.
About these individual stories, which is how a lot of horror anthology movies work.
Yes.
Like Tales from the Crypt and that kind of film.
Right.
Generally was like, you know, short stories that were one after another. And the fact that they intercut them, it was like the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
It really felt like a complete story somehow. And you have like this anthology vibe too, threaded together by one of the best pleasures of the year for me. I don't know how you felt about Shatner in this movie, but I could argue that this is some of his funniest work that he's ever done as a comic actor. It's great.
It did remind me, what he was doing reminded me of Vast of Night a little bit, the operator scenes, you know, like, it's a little more B movie than that, but it's similar.
And he works, if you think of it as interstitial, if you think of him as a narrator and as opposed to its own storyline, the tone really works, I think.
It does. There's hints along the way that these stories may be connected somehow. The different little vignettes that we're watching. The very first time when the teens are going to go in the high school and investigate the murders that happened at the high school, they go in, they have based this story on a police video of the murder scene that they're watching. We see the police officer in that scene. We then see him and his family in a separate story and you go, oh, okay, that's the cop. So there's a connection there, but it's very loose and very tenuous. And then you kind of forget about that. And to your point, what I'm getting at is when William Shatner starts on his whole narration journey of playing this drunken DJ, something is revealed that is a very direct connection between one of the stories. And it changes everything.
Changes everything.
The way you're thinking about it and the way you're thinking about him and that story and what's going to happen to it. It's
kind
of neat.
It's great. I was so impressed. I was so impressed because it's like, it's smart movie making. It's smart. Yes. Surprising ways of telling story, irregardless of it being a genre movie or a holiday genre movie, which is kind of like the barrel bottom, right? Like, it doesn't, in my mind, get a lot. I mean, we did get Ginger Dead Man, which we got a lot of pleasure out of, so maybe I'm talking out my ass, but generally, like, holiday themed horror movies are just kind of like it's the most gimmick oriented.
Yeah.
And they sidestepped all of that with this
one. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's really scary. I think it should be noted. This isn't a kid's movie. That's the other thing. It really suckers you. It, for a while, you think you're dealing with a movie that kids would be fine to see. I don't know. You're a dad. You tell me. It gets a little bit rougher than I thought it was going to.
Yeah. There's a lot of lopping of body parts. And then the scariest storyline is that family, the former police officer, and what happens in his home. And I've lectured on this podcast now probably a dozen times. When we talk about horror movies and trying to make an effective scary monster, we've said it time and time again, Tony. It's like, you can create great scares with simplicity. And, you know, we've talked about just a light turning on could be way more scary and generally usually is more scary if done well than a CGI monster. And this movie has their son, who reminded me of, like, remember Philip Michael Thomas, who was Tubbs in Miami Vice?
He's like a little Tubbs.
He's a little Tubbs.
He was.
And he becomes a scary character. The way they show him become whatever demon or whatever it is, just lights in his eyes, was freaking terrifying and so well done. And I'm going like, are you watching this, filmmakers? That's all you have to do.
It's great. I would have it in my notes. You're actually, we're talking about the changelings, right?
Yes.
Part of this, part of the plot has to do with fairy folk, essentially, and the kidnapping of children and that legacy. And we do get to kind of get glimpses of them, and they're really scary. I mean, the way their eyes just glow, and that's really basically it. You do get a better look later, and the design is pretty great too. I think like they, totally. That's where that's actually some pretty great computer animation on that character.
Specifically, little possessed Tubbs, something's wrong. We know definitely what it is. We know this kid is possessed somehow, but we haven't seen a revelation of it other than him acting really strangely. Parents are trying to kind of figure out what is wrong with our son. The way it's revealed to us before they see it is like I won't give it away, but it's like a reflection shot almost. And it's quick. And I'm like, whoa. And I rewound it. I'm like, that's one of the scariest little quick images I've seen in a film in a while. Like in this stupid, campy little movie, quote unquote, man, it's well done. And there's a very hereditary like moment also with this kid that is really effective and scary. I just think it was surprised me every minute. The longer the movie went on, the better it got for me.
I agree, except for the fact that I might argue that's where it was just ahead of us, that it was that good all along. It's just that it took us a while to trust that it was as good as it was.
I totally agree with that. I'm saying my viewing experience was one of, I slowly kind of went with it. But
yeah,
I was
skeptical at the beginning. 100%. And felt like, okay, I was like, this actor has a good moment, or that's a funny line, or I'll get begrudgingly kind of started giving it points. And then I was like, wait, there's too many of these. This is just good. Everybody's good in this movie, like for real.
Yes.
All the performances are really on point. Everybody's really, really doing it. They all have the right kind of sense of humor about it, because I don't want to give the impression of like saying it's actually gruesome and scary, which it actually is, surprisingly so. Like an effective horror movie.
Yeah.
But it's also got a lighthearted quality to it. It's got a buoyant energy to it, and there's some funny gags in it. So you know what it reminds me of a lot is Joe Dante and Gremlins and that kind of sensibility.
Yes. Now you've hit on what I want to say, the deeper level. I think this movie had a great spirit, and I think that's why it works largely, because the message of like the Krampus and the demon and everything is like, the girl actually says it. She goes, you know, this is what happens when we become very cynical and mean to each other, basically. Right. And so the movie celebrates in this weird way, because heads are getting lopped off and everything. The movie celebrates people who are trying to keep it together. And yes, maybe even making bad decisions along the way, a la this family. But I think the overall message is one of hope, as crazy as it sounds, because
I agree with you. I didn't write this down, but I totally feel that. And it's almost like the Christmas message in it is legitimately a Christmas, makes it legitimately a Christmas movie. It knows the difference between good and evil. And what you're really seeing is some kind of morality thing work itself out in the movie, rather than a slasher movie kind of,
but in a very dark way, which works. So for example, it's easy to look at the end that some of these characters meet and say it's a nihilistic movie. So one of the characters I'm thinking of in that little family, before he gets his end, he has a moment with someone in his family that is beautiful, and it's like an admission. And then she admits something, and he admits something, and he gets sucked out the door. But it's like, before they come to a realization.
That's a good observation. That's really true. I saw it more as just like how it impacted the character building, because I thought that gave these characters more depth than you usually see in something like this. They at one point will do something kind of petty or mean, and then in another scene they'll do something nice, and it makes them more kind of fully fleshed out, more believable. Like we're all a mixture of these things, and the choice is making a choice to do one or the other.
Yes.
And I didn't really look at it in terms of the philosophy of the movie, but I think you're right. Like it's got more It's a Wonderful Life in it than you'd think it does.
Yes. As heads are rolling down the middle.
Weird.
And Shatner's character is basically like a conscious, and he's saying like, look, horrible things happen, whether it's the holidays or not. So hold on to your families and appreciate everyone in your life, because that's life and it's tough. And it's like, wow, he literally makes that plea.
Yeah. He's like part Rod Serling and part, Jiminy Cricket moralizing.
Yeah.
And
yes. And he's drunk, which is funny.
And, say what you will about some of his choices or how tasteful some of his comedy is, but he commits to it as a real character, which another thing that surprised me about the movie, and maybe that's the fact that it is Canadian and he's Canadian and maybe they had a certain kind of approach and language that he believed in or something.
Sure.
I don't know, but he really showed up to be in this movie.
He did.
In a way, I've seen him just kind of looked like he had a few bourbons and just got through and got paid. He really showed up for this. And this is 2015. It's, he certainly was able to just show up for the money in 2015.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he really clearly worked on this part and had, agreed. and had more depth to it than I thought he was going
agreed.
To.
He was playing a character, not playing Shatner.
Right.
Although there were Shatner touches, he was playing a character.
Well, of course, you can't, you're going to get some Shatner.
Right.
You're going to get some Shatner on you no matter what happens here.
I think those jokes he makes that are maybe uncomfortable also fit only because a 80-year-old DJ who's a drunk probably would make those jokes, right?
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. And okay, let's not go too far, but at the same time, give it another compliment.
Yeah.
There are moments with Shatner in the scenes where the movie becomes entertaining but ridiculous, where he's not really in character.
Yep.
It gets there.
Yep.
But there's the beginning where he's doing shtick. Where
he's riffing,
But in those moments, the movie becomes a pleasurable, trashy B movie.
Yes.
And it's not you're not bored. You're my God, now it's becoming, now it's got a little bit of really crappy movie in here.
Yes.
And that's actually kind of great too.
He has one of my lines of the year when he's talking about the weather guy. He goes, I think he has a master's degree from Columbia or something depressing like that. it's just Shatner going off, I think, and they just rolled on him.
That's funny.
So yeah, man, I don't know how much further we can go without giving stuff away.
I really don't want to give stuff away. I want to give a shout out to anytime. Here's an example. The movie's first line is Santa passing by a reindeer and saying, "Easy there, Blitzen." And I'm like, oh God, here we go.
This is
another reason I thought it was going to be bad. As it goes on, his relationship with the reindeer and the elves becomes so funny. And the names of these elves, first of all, every time another elf character shows up, I'm dying over here. Dying. Yeah.
And stay the way right that there, jingle.
Yeah, yeah. No sparkles. just unbelievable. Unbelievably funny.
It's just
truly funny. I was laughing.
Yes,
I was
me too.
Really laughing it was, late night Comedy Central stuff. I was this is so much hipper than I thought it was going to be.
So much hipper. It's got my, again, another favorite line. Could be my favorite line of any movie we've ever done in our whole run. And I'm going to have to beat myself out. It's an elf to Santa. And he says, I'm going to eat your fucking brains, you fucking Christmas.
I know.
Choice.
that's what I'm saying. There's these moments where you're just these guys are so far ahead of us. They're just
so far ahead. And Santa has this lovely, he's conflicted because these are his precious little elves and they've been corrupted. And he doesn't want to do what he's doing.
No. Well, you got to do what you got to do. It's so smart. It's smart. Those scenes, each movie, threaded together as they are, each vignette seems to have almost another director in mind too.
Yeah.
And I got a big Terry Gilliam vibe. I think they were watching a lot of Terry Gilliam movies when they were doing the Santa stuff, because those wide angles and those extreme, crazy, violent moments were
great call.
Right out of Brazil.
Great so call. Good. Yeah, and a lot of gremlins here.
A lot of gremlins. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This one gave me hope. And every scene, every section of it, what's also great about it is that it doesn't let up. There is a lot of anthology movies. There'll be a episode or a storyline that is silly or for kids or about something, you know, cartoonish. That's not the case here. You kind of think that's going to happen maybe yes. with the family in the car, that they're going to go comedy with that. And it's, don't get me wrong, there are funny things kind of in each segment.
Oh, yeah.
But each segment also has really disturbing things in it. Like it, each segment legitimizes its horror roots really clearly.
That ain't your son.
Did you not see what he did?
The atmosphere here in Bailey Downs is truly grim this holiday season. It's the warm Christmas.
The kids in the high school, for example, starts off, again, you think it's going to be like this painful adolescent boring,
like Riverdale, like an episode of Riverdale or something.
Yes, you know? Or one of those horrible,
no offense
Netflix,
to Riverdale, but
right, one of those horrible Netflix zombie things we've watched with young teens all fighting all the time and just vapid characters who are just yelling at each other, and it ends up being this like sexually demonic. Yeah. I don't want to give anything away, but it goes in a way that you do not see coming.
A lot farther than you think it's going to go.
Yeah, it's like it follows at one point. I'm like, yeah, what's happening here?
And, you know, a lot of, like, just let's give credit where credit's due. Zoe de Grand Maison, I believe that's how you pronounce her name, playing Molly in that section, is fantastic.
Phenomenal.
Wonderful young actor.
Everybody.
There's a few standouts, but everybody's yes. really good. Everybody's really good. Amy Forsyth, who plays the teen daughter of the other family, is terrific in it.
Phenomenal. The husband and wife cop, the cop and his wife, phenomenal.
They're great.
Little Tubbs, phenomenal.
Particularly the wife. I'm going to get her name wrong, probably. Woo. It is, I think, Olunike Adelier. I can only try to pronounce that correctly. I apologize. Yep. But she really got
great.
To me. I thought she was fantastic.
In fact, we're about to do the Tony and Maddie Awards.
It's the second annual Tony and Maddie Awards.
I was afraid of recency bias, but she was right up on the top of my list to maybe get Performance of the Year. Like
I got out
much...
of it by not count. I can't count. This movie's going to count for next year.
Agreed. Okay, so we're on the same page so in so many ways in this film. Couple moments that aren't so great. We mentioned the CGI and stuff since we've lavished praise on this movie. There's a scene that made me laugh, and it's I don't mean to pick on anyone, and maybe it was purpose to throw us off the scent, but there's a scene I just thought of you, like you and I watching this together and dying laughing, when the father of the little family kind of spins out in the car and throws a little tantrum on the steering wheel, like damn. And I'm like, I've never seen an actor be so far off the basic emotion of anger and rage in that scene.
I kind of took it on purpose. I thought it was funny. You're right, but I felt like they were trying to show this guy's repression and disconnection from his emotions, even in anger. He didn't even know how to express that properly.
It very well could be, because I'll heap praise on him now. Later, he has a moment that I had already alluded to with his wife that is just awesome. And he's a good actor. It's
it
just
gets
that
you
moment.
Teary-eyed.
Yeah, it really does.
This movie's nuts. I haven't been this surprised since Fast
yeah. and Furious. There's like Oedipal in this. There's the whole thing about teen pregnancies and sexuality. There's a lot here that you wouldn't think by again watching the first minute that was going to be in this.
And some like Shyamalan level way diminute what is happening stuff
that could be my favorite scene of the year too. That very
I know. I know.
I'm like, no way. I almost dropped the remote. I'm like, no way. You know what it kind of reminded me of? Okay, this won't give it away. Have you seen the Casper Kelly videos, like Too Many Cooks?
Oh, yeah.
Right? And he just did a new one called Yule Log. Have you seen that yet?
Not yet, but so I you love know those, Too Many Cooks.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. So you know those things they have on streaming services, like the Yule Log? I don't know if you've seen that, where it's just, it'll play Christmas music, it'll be a Yule Log. So, of course, Casper Kelly, it turns into, I won't even say.
Okay, but of course.
You know what
I know what's coming. Right. I can't wait to see it. It's genius. That's a really good idea.
That there's a scene towards the end of this movie that Santa reminded me of, like, the way Too Many Cooks just digresses into this, like, what am I watching here? And particularly that actor, there's someone in Too Many Cooks who is doing things to that sitcom family.
Yeah,
it develops
a dreamlike quality in the action at the end, which is pretty, which is, I can
it's
see
off.
That.
It's off sync. Yeah. It's disturbing. But it's scary. It's awesome.
Comedy, great thing to bring up, because I feel like that's the level of comedy. Somebody in here was that level of comedian kind of writing in this and thinking about the movie at that level. It really feels like it's just so much better than you
thought. I'll tell you what
I thought it was going to be. I don't know what to do.
They didn't announce too many cooks. They were talk about being ahead of an audience. They just released it at 2 a.m. And these are like the best of the best comedic writers and weird minds. I think it's that level. Like they could be writing for Adult Swim.
Something's going on here.
Yeah.
Something is definitely going on here.
I want to see what these people have made since. I didn't get a chance. Did you get a chance to look at any of that? Like what they've done since? Or
I do know a little bit. What did I find out? That the, you know, there are a few directors here.
Yeah, it's like three of them.
There's three directors. And we've got people that worked on Orphan Black and a lot of other TV stuff.
Okay.
You know, they've done cool stuff, but I think this is the first movie they've all done together, certainly. And I think it's a bunch of people that like working together that got together to do this. It has a feeling like that, you know,
like TV people and maybe some commercial people and production people, whatever they do next, I'm in line for.
Right. I just want to, you know, look, get past the title sequence, get past the cover art. It's a really bad poster.
Yeah.
The poster's terrible.
Yeah.
It just doesn't look. It looks like a bad kung fu movie from like,
You
know, 2009. I just don't know who did this poster.
It looks like an Alien Predator thing or something, Christmas version. And I maybe that is to throw us off again.
Maybe so.
Tony, anything, any last thoughts on this movie before we get to the Maddie and Tony's? I got to put my tux on.
So many Canadian movies have been great, like off-center Christmas movies.
Yeah.
So we got This is Canadian. Black Christmas is a Canadian movie. Christmas Story is a Canadian movie and made by the same guy who made Black Christmas. Did you know that?
I did not know that. That's insane.
And then you got another movie called Pontypool. Did you ever see Pontypool?
No.
Pontypool's pretty cool. Pontypool has a character like the Shatner character.
Mm.
It's basically a zombie apocalypse movie that takes place in this DJ's bunker.
Oh, wow.
And the whole apocalypse is happening outside, and he's just getting drunk and talking about it. So I kind of think this was a reference to Pontypool.
Sure, yeah.
That's something to check out if you haven't seen it. Stephen McHattie plays the DJ in that, and he's great in it.
I'll check it out.
That's me being a film nerd. That's it. That's
love
all
it.
To say.
All right, everyone, get your tuxedos on.
Get ready, P4Pers. The very best in paranormal film and television of 2022 is here. It's the second annual Tony and Maddie Awards, starring Tony Arkin, Maddie Blake, Sister Sledge, Ruben Kincaid himself, Dave Madden, Charo, an Osmond brother, not Donnie, Desi Arnaz Jr., Christy or Jimmy McNichol. Plus, how many categories before Maddie shoehorns in a Sly Stallone reference? Let's find out. It's the second annual Tony and Maddie's. Like a screaming sheen.
Jessica!
Or a Netflix zombie series. You'll want this to stop. And now your hosts, Tony and Maddie.
The selection is coming from just this past year, since our last Tony and Maddie Awards, which was the Alien episode, every movie since then. So we are looking at favorite scene, favorite line, favorite shot, favorite performance, and favorite overall film based on the films that we have done the last year since our last award ceremony. So you can scroll our list of films since Alien and decide for yourself all these categories and play along. And by the way, please keep messaging us. What did you think of this movie? And also send your favorite scene, line, shot, performance, and film and play along the Maddie and Tony's with us. Tony, here we go. Would you like to start with
this
favorite?
Is hard, dude. We didn't.
Did you have any qualifications? Did you theme it? Did you do anything like that? Because I kind of did. I made a rule for myself.
I have top threes in each category.
Okay.
So that's what I did.
Okay. You have to pick a winner, though. You have to pick a winner. We have to like present the envelope to the winner. So how about this? if one of your top three matches with, because I only did one choice for each category, that's the automatic winner.
Yeah, I don't think both of us voted for Sound of Music, though. So I think that's not going to happen.
All right. So the only rule I made for myself was a different movie for each category. I did not double up because, quite frankly, The Shining was in this run of this year, and Shining could be in every single category. I could have just picked Shining, favorite movie, favorite scene, favorite, you know what I mean?
I agree with you. And in that regard, I actually had a rule I forgot to tell you that I kicked Shining off.
I almost did.
And I almost did too. And then I put it back on one because I just couldn't help it.
Okay. All right.
But I did also kick off Alien because I just felt for both of those movies, it's just kind of like,
it's
not that it's unfair. It's just that they have been so discussed and we just need new blood talked about, you know, and I don't think I don't have like genius alternatives here, but
yeah, no,
I just didn't want to dwell on those movies. So
same. Yeah. So for that reason, I picked a different movie for each category. And The Shining does make an appearance, but I like I said, Shining could just be every award. So I was
we're on the same exact page.
All right. Let's start with favorite scene. Give your three, and then we'll see if mine matches, and that'll be the winner.
Oh, okay. Okay. So here's where I cheated and put The Shining in.
Fine.
Didn't want to, but I just couldn't help myself. But it is number three. It's not number one, just because, you know, and this is also arbitrary. Let me just say, I hate this. I hate you for doing it to me. I hate the whole idea of ranking films. I think it's ridiculous.
I know. That's why we do it.
It has no bearing to reality, or I may feel differently tomorrow. That's all I'm going to say. So scenes number three, it's the office meeting in The Shining.
Excellent.
It's the meeting with Ullman and Ullman's assistant Nicholson in The Shining, where Ullman describes the estate and what's going to happen. And I think that I've never seen a scene with more layered weirdness in it, ever. Of every time I've seen The Shining, there may be some times where it's on where I'll fast forward a section to get to another section. I have never fast forwarded that scene.
Excellent.
Ever.
Yeah.
I think it's incredible.
Oh, it's still hard for me to believe it actually happened here. But it did. And I think you can appreciate why I wanted to tell you about it.
I certainly can, and I also understand why your people in Denver left it for you to tell me.
Well, obviously, I mean, some people can be put off by the idea of staying alone at a place where something like that actually happened.
Well, you can rest assured, Mr. Ullman, that's not going to happen with
me. That's my number three. Number two, I put on Asking Carrie out on a date, and Carrie...
Such a charming scene with William Catt. We talked William about Catt, that this time.
When
I
she
love
runs,
it. I
when
love
she
it,
runs
I
out of the room, I just it just broke my heart. I just thought it was great.
I thought of it.
My number one scene, just to be contrary, I gotta say this movie I'm such a champion for. It's the demon parents come into the door in the movie The Gate.
Thought of that too. The demon parents reveal, you think they're there to save them and they turn to be demons. It's wonderful.
One of the creepiest things I've ever seen in a movie.
All right. Those are three awesome choices. I'm opening my envelope. Now, my winner is not one of those three, so we're going to have to make a decision here. My winner for favorite scene is In the Earth, the foot removal scene. The whole dialogue going on there, with, you know, the bargaining, it's just, and the missing. Come on, stay, you know, it's just wonderful. Yeah,
that's incredibly gruesome.
I think it has to go to The Shining.
Okay, since that's it's the only time it's going to appear, let's just do that. Okay.
The other thing is that I've themed this whole thing to be a 70s award show. Basically.
Oh, okay, great.
I'm looking at, you know, I'm seeing J.P. Morgan in the crowd. I'm seeing Vic Tavak. And
I should
so that
have put
means,
the, right, I should have put the ruffles on my tux.
That means Jack Nicholson is probably sitting in the second row just waiting for us to say his name. I don't want to deal with him in the after party if we don't give him this award. So let's just
All right, let's do it. Let's do The Shining.
All right. Favorite line of this past year?
So number three for me is a line I've always loved, and I was reinvigorated by it when we saw it again, and that's, "Where are you going, Mr. Fat Jack?" from Splash, when Mr. Fat Jack jumps off this tiny boat
yes,
to get the little boat.
Yes. So great.
I just, his line reading on it, it kills me. Kills me. I'm going to double up on the gate and say that my number two is actually cheating and is "You've been bad."
Oh, so good. So scary.
You've been bad.
So that was great for me. And then I'm going to go and do a bit of a line exchange because the line is great, but you have to set it up properly. Mm-hmm. And it's from Bubba Hotep, and it goes, the award would go to Ozzie Davis, and it would be,
"But first, would you like a ding dong? Oh, I don't mean mine. I mean a chocolate ding dong. Of course, mine would be chocolate now that I have been dyed."
It is. I laughed harder at that line, I think, than anything all year.
I can tell you that Ozzie Davis makes another appearance on my list. So
really?
Yeah. Uh-huh. In a different category, but he's coming. Excellent. Great choices. My favorite line of the year came from Nope in an otherwise underwhelming performance by this actor, but she has the line of the year for me. And she goes,
"Didn't I tell you this motherfucker was going to come up here with a non-electrical camera? Let's go, boy."
And they high five.
That was funny.
Made
that
me
was
laugh,
very funny.
And I just couldn't get that scene out of my head.
As is the title line, Nope. When anybody says Nope in the movie, it's pretty great. I mean,
And there's no other thing to say. I literally said that when I've had a couple paranormal experiences. I'm like, Nope, Nope, Nope. Don't want this. Mm-hmm. Thought I wanted it. Don't
no,
want
it's,
it.
No, it's really how you feel.
What do you think? Who do we give favorite line? I'm leaning towards Bubba Hotep.
If we don't give it to Ozzie Davis, I'm quitting the show.
Great. Okay. Done. Favorite shot.
Wait, done? I'm quitting the show. I'm off the show or what?
Now I want a ding dong. Okay. Favorite shot. This is a little different than scene. This is just like in your mind, there's an image. You know, there's between a shot and a scene.
Yeah, I do. I would say, I'm really cheating like crazy because the gate's all over this whole list.
Fine.
And number three is the body falling of the old handyman. Zombie falls onto the ground and 100 little goblin zombies are like pop out of him and
amazing.
He becomes all of these things. It's one of my favorite effect shots in history. And
awesome.
I just can't get enough of it. So that's number three. Number two for me would be from In the Earth. And it's the those incredible tracking strobe shots with the fog and the lighting flares and stuff when they're trying to escape the forest in that weird zone. Just knocks me out. I can't stop thinking about that. Love that shot or those series of shots. And then, you know what? I'm just going to go ahead and say my number one is from Nightmare on Elm Street. And it's the first kill that happens in that movie. That's a one shot that just changed the whole movie. Like the whole entire film goes to a new level and you got to buckle in and deal with it. And it's just beyond belief. It's worse every time you see it. Like you can't quite remember how bad it is.
If I had had three on mine, that would have been my number two. So that might be our winner. But favorite shot, here's where my shining appearance comes. It's Jack staring out the window. No dialogue, about 30 seconds long. I think it's like 28 seconds exactly. Camera pushes in on him. We are seeing that he's slowly devolving, but we haven't seen the clear like break, like, oh, and we see it with just a face, and then you get Saturday. it's just a shot that I always think of when I think of Jack Nicholson. I think just awesome. I think because Nightmare would have been my two, I'm leaning towards that, and we've already given Jack an award, so how about we give favorite shot to Nightmare on Elm Street for the kill?
I think that would be sensible.
And I remember when we discussed that movie, I kind of broached you almost as a question. I said, the movie, like, because I didn't remember how almost campy it is. And then I was like, does that movie like change big time after that kill? And you were like, oh yeah. And so it's a different movie from then on.
It really is.
Favorite performance. We have two categories left: favorite performance and favorite film. Here we go. These are big awards. Tony, your favorite performer.
I know who my number one is.
I
think it's the only one that really matters for me. It's Piper Laurie and Carrie.
Oh my God, I almost picked her. I debated.
I mean,
you'll see why I didn't. That's a great one. You can't go wrong. She was nominated for Academy Award for that. So
yeah.
Your poor child, don't you know? He doesn't let you know he's working through you. He ended your father and carried him off.
He ran away, Mama.
The devil tempted him.
You ran away with a woman, Mama. Everybody knows that.
You must renounce this power. You must give it up. You must never use it.
My favorite performance, and this is why he didn't get favorite line, which it would have if I didn't pick him as my favorite performance, is Ossie Davis and Bubba Hotep as Jack Kennedy. They dyed me this color all over.
It's fantastic. I'm glad, you know, I mean, he's got to be on the list somehow. Yeah. So I think either one of these is.
I think we gave him favorite line, didn't we?
Yeah.
Bubba Hotep. So why don't we give Piper Laurie.
Okay.
Favorite performance.
Okay. Okay. I'm good with that.
And finally, a big one, Tony.
Mm-hmm.
Favorite overall film since Alien. The last year, we've done a lot of great ones, some duds. There was a documentary in there we both hated, as I remember.
Oh, yeah.
But overall, non-Shining Division. I didn't pick it either.
Yeah, I can't, this is where The Shining and The Alien isn't really possible. Honestly, Carrie should be equally kind of disqualified in a way.
It was my pick,
my number two.
Okay. So, okay.
But here's my theory. I had The Gate on for number three.
Yeah.
Carrie is number two. But number one, which I'm gonna fight for a little bit because I really believe in it, is Attack the Block.
Uh-oh. This is our first we're gonna have to go to the Academy. We're gonna have to go to the Academy.
I think Attack the Block, you know, I've seen it before. Reviewing it, it got a lot better for me. I think it's only aged better with time. I think that it's got in it a actor who should by all rights be one of the biggest stars on the planet. I think John Boyega has in him to be great, all-time great. And I hope that happens. And if it does, this movie's going to, everybody's going to look back 20 years from now and look back at Attack the Block and go, we should have known then.
Yeah. Really enjoyed it. I really, truly did. Why don't we split the difference and come to a compromise? We both left out The Shining. We both decided to leave out Alien in so many ways. We threw Carrie in there as a last minute leave out. So why don't we go with Carrie since it was both on our list? That was our rule going into this. We both mentioned it as our favorite film.
I'm not. Yeah, well, okay. I mean,
and
I'm
here's
not
the
gonna...
other reason I'd fight for it, because it is a huge movie, no doubt. But it was only in rewatching it for this podcast that I realized how great it was. To me, it was a famous movie. It was a Stephen King movie, but kind of a throwaway to me. Like I didn't understand how complex it was. I didn't really understand the level of performance in that movie and kind of what it was saying, how ahead of its time it was. So in a way, it's like an indie movie to me. It's got that spirit. It's phenomenal, even though it's huge.
Well, I mean, it is kind of an indie. I mean, it's not an indie movie, but, you know, it was a dark horse and nobody, you know, Stephen King's first book and nobody was untested waters, kind of De Palma's first huge movie in Hollywood.
Right.
So, you know, it wasn't like a sure thing the way that it looks like it would have been from here, you know?
Right.
You're not going to get an argument for me about making Carrie number one. It's got, you know, I'm not under any illusions about how great it is or like that De Palma is a, you know, I mean, it's kind of like now becoming a known reviewed idea that De Palma was always a much better filmmaker than we gave him credit for at the time, you know?
Yeah.
It's clearer now all the time for me as I see his movies and stuff, what an artist he is. He's really, he's really doing amazing stuff. I love that movie. You know, Attack the Block. I will say, you know, Carrie has a couple of clunker scenes in it. I'm not going to fight about this, but like Attack the Block doesn't have a tuxedo renting scene.
I love that scene though.
I know you do. I know you do.
So much
but
love
you
music.
Love it kind of despite, but you love it nostalgic kind of, there's a kind of irony to the way we like that, but that, you know, I'll just say it's not its strongest moment.
I'm not sure how ironic I am about that. Like I want to like dress like that and listen to that music unironically.
Yeah. Well, I like how that's just like, you know, how you feel, but that's not really like the movie.
All right. I'm very comfortable with that decision.
But you're in the 70s. So you want Carrie. You want this to be a 70s vibe. I get it.
It's just that we both mentioned it. So I'm more comfortable with making that the overall winner.
Okay.
I mean, it's a democracy here, Tony. I know you're an anarchist.
Mm-hmm.
I know you want some Banana Republic anarchist society where everyone just.
No, that's not true. I'm an anarchist. I just want me doing crazy stuff. I don't care what you do.
The island of Dr. Tony Moreau.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm hoping that next year maybe we can have a slightly, you know, a slightly more inventive conclusion. I mean, Carrie is an old movie.
It's okay though. We have Bubba Hotep on this list. We did a good job of leaving off The Shining.
We did pretty well.
We got Nope makes an appearance. We did great.
Much to my chagrin. I don't want Nope on the list.
Hey, I put in your beloved In the Earth. I put a scene there.
Oh, so now we're doing each other favors? That's not how award ceremony is supposed to work.
Oh,
we've just totally discredited ourselves.
Favors and award shows? Oh, I think some of that goes on.
Come on. Oh, so nihilistic of you.
In fact, you want to move up, attack the block, a little bit of booger sugar sent my way? We could make an adjustment.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
Merry Christmas, everyone. Happy New Year, Tony. Godspeed, making your second feature film. I'm so happy for you. I love you. And if I may say, I'll see you on set.
Yes, sir, you will. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
You miserable old building and loan.
We hope you've enjoyed this edition of Rated P for Paranormal. Please rate, review, and share. It really does make a difference. For more information, to participate, and even donate, go to our main page, anchor.fm/ratedparanormal. On social media, we're @ratedparanormal. All music is by Andrew Galdens Jr. You can find him on Instagram @kidriga, or go to therocketscience.bandcamp.com. This podcast was created, written, produced, and edited by Maddie Blake and Anthony Arkin.
I want a ding dong.
An Osmond brother, not Donnie.